It looks like it's recording. Yeah. I am Evelyn Freeman. Today is August 16th, 2013, and I am interviewing Dr. Rudine Sims Bishop, whose birthday is July 31, 1937.
Hi, Rudine.
Hi, Evie.
Could you talk a little about the positions that you held or the roles that you have played at Ohio State, in what units and over what time period?
Well, I came to Ohio State in 1986 from the University of Massachusetts, having taught for a number of years prior to that. And I was hired in the College of Education as certainly not a replacement, but in the position that had been held by Charlotte Huck. I came in as a full professor, and that was the main role that I played throughout my time at Ohio State. I was also, along with Janet Hickman, co-director of the annual Ohio State University Children's Literature Conference, and at some point I was section head for the group within teaching and learning that was called Language, Literature, and Reading, LLR, I guess.
Thank you. Can you talk a little bit about, back on the roles, I know that you also, though, were involved a lot in the university in terms of committees, we could also talk about later as well. That might come up later.
Yeah, I'm not as many as some people seem to think. And I think the thing I left out in the previous question was the duration, how long. I retired in 2002. As far as university committees, I think the most recent one was looking at the potential role of retirees in the university, and as well looking at those people who seem to be stuck, if you will, it's not a good term, but who have been associate professors and had not been promoted, and we were looking at talking about possible ways to do that. Other than that, I think most of my university-wide, committee work really just had to do with doctoral student committees. I was at some point on a committee that was, I think, advisory to the Wexner Center. Mm-hmm. But other than that, I'm not remembering a lot of university committee work.
Can you also then talk about your own family background and experiences that you feel shaped you prior to coming to OSU?
I was born in a small town in Pennsylvania. Sounds like the born in a log cabin in the woods. As Virginia Hamilton would say, on the outer edge, I guess, of the Depression. But we had very little money, and my parents had not much opportunity for education, and so that was highly valued in the family and pushed. And so, you know, the thing was, you go to school and you do well in school. And I took that to heart. So I was pretty good. I was a good student. For the most part, and it was a small town. The African American population was quite small. You know, sort of everybody knew everybody. When I graduated from high school, this will give you a sense of the numbers. There were 6 African American students out of 185. And that was a large class of African Americans. Usually there were 1 or 2. And I say this to sort of talk about shaping. As I said, I was a good student, and two of us African American girls were at the head of the class in high school. And so that meant that I got some kind of support. I mean, we had no money. In order to go to school, I had to have jobs and scholarships and that sort of thing. And so all of that kind of paid off in that regard. I attended a state teacher's college, again, partly because of money, partly because of support, partly because I knew that I wanted to be a teacher. I think part of the experience of, you know, family and background and community shaping who I became was that in that community there were no African American teachers. Mm-hmm. Well, except one, my godmother, who taught the nursery school. So everybody mm-hmm. in the community went through Mrs. Foster. But once you got into the public schools, there were no. There was one woman who had been a teacher, one African American woman who had been a teacher, and she was really inspirational. And because I did well in school and teachers liked me, I guess, and because my parents had such a value in education, I knew that from the time I was maybe in fourth grade that what I wanted to be was a teacher. I think the other side of that coin is that I didn't know many other things. You know, nurse was one possibility, secretary was a possibility, but given that time and place. But so I wanted to be a teacher, and that sent me off to State Teachers College, Westchester, where I had a really good experience, I thought. And again, I did well in terms of grades and academics, and was fairly active in some of the activities. And I don't know how far you want me to go with this whole trajectory here. Started teaching in Bucks County, Pennsylvania. Moved from in third grade, fifth grade. Moved from there to being a language arts supervisor in Upper Bucks County. This is sort of Pearl Buck, Oscar Hammerstein kind of country. 100 square miles of territory and about 5 elementary schools. So, you know, I drove around to the schools. And I think there were about 3 black people in the whole territory. So I began to feel pretty socially isolated after a while, and looked to different horizons. And wrote to some African-American, historically black colleges, and said, you know, I've got this master's degree, and I'm, could I come and teach? And I think some of them said, yeah. And don't think so. But Morgan in Baltimore said, yeah, sure, you know, come on and teach, you know, curriculum development, whatever. And I taught a little bit of children's literature there as well. That was a good experience. And from there, I went to a conference after I'd been at Morgan for 2 years. And it was the time when ESEA and Title I and all of that was out, and people were writing proposals, and I think there had not been as much success as they had hoped with some of the historically black colleges. So there was this workshop conference in Texas that was set up to help people begin to write those things. And the head of my department asked me if I wanted to go, and I said, "Oh, sure." So when I got there, I met Ken Goodman.
Oh my gosh!
And Roger Shai.
I didn't know that's how you met.
That's how I met Ken.
Oh my gosh!
And I had realized, by that time that if I wanted to stay in college teaching, and I had decided I liked it, that I needed a doctor's degree. I guess I'd made that known or something, I don't know, but Ken invited me to apply to Wayne State University to their program in, they had a program called an instructor internship. They brought in people who had at least 5 years pre-college teaching and interviewed us, made us, you know, do the GRE, all that, and hired us as instructors on a year-to-year basis, but then also we were doctoral students. And that was a terrific experience. You know, I met some really good friends there. And it was from there, of course, that the trajectory mm-hmm. took off. I spent a year at Buffalo and then on to UMass Amherst, where I was happy. And then Charlotte Huck decided to retire. And by that time, I was hired as the director of the reading program. So it was reading instruction, and children's literature is a part of that. And by that time, my preference was children's lit, and this was an opportunity to focus there. So here I am.
I'm very glad.
Yeah, me too.
In what ways do you generally identify yourself, both in terms of how you see yourself as well as how others see you, in terms of gender, race, religion, etc.? How has being a female shaped you, you feel, and then how do you feel like your other identities have shaped your life?
Well, I think given the time that I grew up, I tend to identify myself perhaps equally as black and female, but I think the black or African American tends to come first. In terms of religion, I'm Protestant, African Methodist, Episcopal, have been all my life. And class, you know, has changed from, I grew up certainly in what would have been a lower socioeconomic group, as in no money, and and now, you know, we're comfortable. So, you know, I guess all of that, I think people tend to say middle class. How has being a female shaped my life? You know, it's really hard to say. When I came of age when the issue of the day was not sexism or feminism. I mean, didn't mean that it didn't exist or that people weren't fighting it. But the issue of the day at the time was race and racial discrimination and equality and all of that. I mean, I graduated from high school about the time Rosa Parks was starting that boycott. So it's my femaleness, I guess, was shaped in a fairly traditional way. I mean, the expectation was you finished school, you went to college, you know, you got married. I remember talking about having children, teaching until or staying home until they went to school, and then, you know, going back to teaching, etc. So I think my primary identity really is as an African American. And how has that shaped my life? Well, I don't know. It's hard to articulate, I think. I mean, it's being black in America is what it is. It's challenging. Challenging. But it has changed, certainly. It's a lot better now than it would have been, than it was way back when I graduated from high school. There's a story there. When I graduated, I said, another girl and I were at the top of the class, and we both needed money to go to school. We both wanted to go to school. And so we went downtown to one of the local 5 and 10 stores where my father had worked for a long time to see if we could get a summer job, because other girls would do that, get a summer job as a sales clerk. And we there had been in the paper an editorial about how my city, Pottsville, shares the pride of these two young black women, you know, who had graduated and da-da-da. And so we just knew that this would be a piece of cake. And we were told that the town just was not ready to hire black girls behind the counter at that point. So we've come a long way. We've come a long way. You know, there are other kinds of things. When we went to Westchester, there were 5 of us, young black girls, who shared a room in the dorm. And that was fine. I mean, I made some lifelong friendships there. But we came to understand that it hadn't been too many years since we would not have been allowed to live on campus. No, so things have changed. Things have changed.
So thinking about those identities here at Ohio State, do you feel like being a woman shaped any of your experiences here at OSU? And if so, how? And if not, you have any thoughts on why you don't think being a woman did that?
You know, I think that in our field, in elementary education, in literacy, in teaching, I think that women dominate. I don't know if dominate is the word, but there's certainly more of us than men, and therefore, you know, I don't think I felt that being a woman really either held me back or pushed me forward within the college. I think I didn't want administrative positions, so you know, I didn't have any experience with trying to advance in that regard and being denied, or felt that I was being denied. I came with tenure and rank, and so I didn't have to go through that process. So, you know, I really felt pretty comfortable, I have to say, in regards to being a woman in the College of Education and teaching and learning.
And how about your other identities? The African American here at Ohio State.
Again, I mean, I certainly was aware of it, but I can't say that I felt, again, any personal kinds of issues or challenges that came my way because of being a black woman. I'm aware that probably is not the case for everybody. Maybe I'll just stop there. But you know, personally, I think I was fortunate, and it may have been just my time of life and circumstances.
When you were in the college, mm-hmm. can you talk a little bit about the other women in your unit in terms of their positions and their identities regarding race or class, and what you thought the climate in your unit and in the university might be like for them?
Are we saying unit as in college, or do you think teaching and learning?
I think either. I mean, I think you could talk about different levels, especially if you perceive differences in the climate within, let's say, your department versus the college versus the university as a whole, if you had any perspectives on that.
I don't know. I mean, there aren't that many of us of black women, certainly within the teaching and learning, a few more, of course, in the college. In terms of the university, I can remember that when I came, as I said, I came as a full professor, which made me the second African-American female full professor on campus.
You mean in the whole university?
Yes.
That I didn't
know. Ann Pruitt was already there, and neither of us had earned our tenure at the university. So there's that impact. I think the first black woman that I know about who earned tenure and full professor here was Gwen Cartland.
Oh my, that late.
That late. Now it may be that historically, way back when, that I missed someone who did become a tenured full professor here. But in my time, I know I was the second one to, at the time. There were just the two of us.
And that was 1980.
When I first arrived, 86. as I said, I may not have all of the history from back in the day. I think that says that there was an impact somehow at the university level or across the university.
While you were here at OSU, did you have any concerns in your unit or in the university about equity issues? I assume they mean here women's equity, but I don't know for sure.
Yeah, and again, it's hard for me to know. I mean, as I said, I think within the college, my impression was, and I don't know, you may talk to other women who have a whole different impression, but my impression was that the climate was pretty good. I mean, if there were women who were section heads, who were heads of the schools or departments, we had female dean. I don't know about salaries, mm-hmm. which may have been one of the equity issues. I'm not sure that I was even aware of what some of those issues might have been, and particularly as it relates to being women.
Can you talk about the most powerful experience you had at Ohio State? I wasn't quite sure what they meant by this, but I'm not quite sure what this question means. But
I'm not sure either, so we'll see what we can come up with. I knew that was going to be a question, and I tried to think about it, and I think that it was for me the opportunity to be a part of one of the premier, if not the premier, children's literature program in the country, children's literature and education. And so that meant that we had influence, certainly in Central Ohio, and the country nationwide, I think. We were able, with that annual conference, to bring in writers and artists who were premier in the country and beyond. I mean, we brought Mem Fox from Australia and Margaret Mahe from New Zealand and Aidan Chambers from England and so on. And to be able to be a part of that was, I think, a powerful experience in many ways.
Did you personally work to affect any institutional change around equity issues? And if so, can you talk about those experiences?
The black faculty, minority faculty in the college, did try to make a difference in terms of the numbers of students from diverse groups who were admitted and the kind of support that they would get while they were here. And I think around hiring faculty and dean. I was a part of that. I didn't take a particular leadership role, but I was a part of that. And I think it was partly keeping in touch, meeting with the deans from time to time, and just making an effort when faculty were coming up for tenure to try to see that they had whatever kind of support they needed to build their portfolio, that kind of thing. I don't recall that I did anything along those lines related to gender issues, gender equity.
Were there any collective efforts around equity change or change for diversity that you either participated in or observed over the time you were at OSU?
Well, I think that the business I was just talking about was about it. I can't think of other collective efforts. Sorry.
That's okay. Do you think that the climate for African American faculty changed over time?
It's hard to tell. I think so. I mean, I would like to think it changed for the better. But it's hard to know. I mean, I couldn't tell you any stories or give you any examples of that other than there are a lot more black female full professors now than there used to be. But I don't know. If you look at the college, for instance, I don't know about numbers. For instance, or people who have wanted positions to advance and not been able to do it. I see young people and some doing well in terms of their own careers, and so that's a good thing.
In terms of either when you left the university or at this point in time, from your perspective, what remains undone relative to the progress of women and other diverse groups?
Well, it might be interesting to see another woman in the position that is currently open in Bricker Hall. I think that with the student body, that we're still we still need a greater push for greater diversity among the undergrads and among doctoral students. I can't tell much about what's happening with faculty in that regard, but I think that's one thing. I'm not sure that I have other things.
Are there any other thoughts, topics, whatever that you want to talk about that we didn't talk about?
I don't think so.
Covered everything you wanted to share.
We did. I was sort of focused on what I thought would be the things I'd be asked about, and I didn't try to come up with
anything new.
Anything new.
So, do you have any memorabilia, like photos, newspaper clippings, correspondence, that you think, or will you be willing to permit archives to photocopy so they could be permanently available?
Yeah, I can't think of anything of that nature that I have, that would belong in these archives, really.
I did have another question. It relates to something earlier. I know that you served multiple times on the personnel committee of the school. In that position, did you sense any issues either for women faculty members or for African American or other minority faculty in terms of the promotion and tenure process? In other words, I guess, did you feel that everyone was treated fairly and that gender or diversity issues were not a factor in that process?
Well, in all honesty, I think that you really, it's very hard to remove those issues from the process. They may not be overt and they may not even be conscious, but I think it's hard to remove them. And so I think there were a couple of instances where it seemed, where I had the sense that maybe a white male would have fared better in that process. And I can't even get specific.
Of course not.
Giving any information about any individual. But you know, I think it's there. I think it's just, it's a part of who we are as a culture. You know.
Are there other women you think that the project should interview, or who would be good to be interviewed for this project?
Well, certainly Ann Pruitt. Ann Pruitt Logan at this point. Jackie Royster. I don't know that I can think of women who were here, you know, some time ago before I arrived, but I suspect those are the folks that we should try to go after. And I just don't know them well enough.
So. Just as a as an aside, someone said the other day that Elvia Bozeman, was she retired by the time you came?
I think so.
Was the first African-American woman to get tenure at Ohio State. I don't think she was ever promoted to full professor. I had her in class, actually.
No
she,
kidding.
Yeah, she had taught at the university school and then became, as many of them did, professors. But yeah, I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
So that was really, and I couldn't remember if she had already retired. I think.
I think she might have.
Yeah.
But at least I don't remember the name or meeting her.
Then I'm supposed to ask if you're willing to, willing to interview any one or two people for this project.
I thought about that. I might be willing to interview someone.
Yeah. Okay. Anything else you want to share or talk about in terms of your experiences here at OSU, both in the college and university-wide?
I don't think so. I really don't. I think we've covered what seems to me to be important parts of this in relation to the whole women's history.
I did have one other question. Mm. As an African-American woman, did you ever feel pressure here to do certain kinds of things, like to be on a committee if there was no other African-American or other woman on the committee, or that you felt like maybe you were called upon to do certain things because of your race and gender?
Yeah, that's another side of the coin. I think there may have been times when I'm not thinking specifically now, and it may be that I'm running it together in terms of here in UMass.
Yes.
But certainly that's a phenomenon that occurs, that when there are not very many representatives of the very diverse groups, and the institution decides that that's a priority or a goal, something that they really want to do. They don't want to have all white committees or all male committees. Then those who represent the group get asked to serve. And sometimes it's token, but sometimes it really is a sincere effort to increase the diversity, and people don't tend to think, well, you know, just on this committee, and how many committees can this one person represent diversity on? I had some of that, I think.
I think that might be it. Unless you have Anything else? I can't think of any other questions at this point.
I don't know. I mean, are there? I guess I would ask you if you wanted me to go back over anything that you think could be expanded upon.
Well, so I was really surprised to learn that when you came as a full professor, you were only one of two women African-American full professors. So that was, I mean, I think that's really astounding to me at a university our size in the 1980s.
Yes.
Or, yeah, you know, yeah. that was the case.
Yeah. And that, I mean, it was women, because there were men, I can't think right now, probably Nelson and some other males,
yeah.
But of the women, it was Anne and me.
Quite astounding to me.
It really is.
Well, I was surprised as well.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's just... And the fact that nobody on campus at the time had, no black female on the campus at the time, had earned tenure here.
Yeah, that's
was particularly startling, mm-hmm. in the bibliography. And Anne and I both, as I said, came in with tenure. So times have changed.
Yes, they have.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. No, I don't. I don't think anything else. I don't think that's...
Yeah. We're concise.
Okay, well, we took about 45 minutes. Oh, I guess it's 36 minutes and 53 seconds. Okay, so about 37 minutes. I think we're all set. So I want to thank Rudine for participating in this project, and we'll sign off.
Okay, thank you.